when I decided that I really wanted to work on this, the first thing I did was go back and look for the most ancient myths that I could find, and that, at least in my mind, was the Rig Veda, and that's where I started. The beauty of the Rig Veda is that it's a time-ordered set of 1,000 or more stanzas that were composed during this whole period of chaos, so that, you know, each event that happened was added into this epic poem that was passed down from generation to generation by chanting, and then they'd bring in initiates and they would teach them the whole thing. And they would become priests and they would carry it on.
They'd laid the whole thing out for us.
Yes. And then the later people, the Hindus,
mm-hmm.
they sort of wrote their own version of the Rig Veda material, and they added in some things that weren't in the original Rig Veda, but as each subsequent set of works came along, like the classics and the Puranas and the Upanishads, they got further and further away from the truth, and they kept distorting the original stories and started attributing certain things that were originally attributed to one deity mm-hmm. in the Rig Veda to some other deity, because their town was a Brahma town and another town was devoted to another deity. So they got distorted.
Did it change as it went on and on over the years, the stories?
Well, the beauty of it is that the Indian people kept the Rig Veda sacred and they didn't change a word of it. Even though these other, I don't like to call them books because there weren't any books mm-hmm. for a couple thousands of years, but these other writings distorted the Rig Veda, but they always kept the Rig Veda sacred. In fact, only the Brahmins were allowed to even after writing came along, the Brahmins were the only ones that were ever allowed to lay their eyes on it.
If
another caste member, a lower caste, looked at it, they could be summarily executed. That's how sacred it was considered.
Well, if you just peeked at it, they'd do you in.
You didn't want to do that.
No, not at all. I'd wait and get your book 2,000 years later and have to take a peek at that. When Velikovsky wrote his book, Worlds in Collision, I mean, he was put up, John, as you well know, a lot of ridicule. His peers wouldn't listen to him. They chastised him. When you wrote your two books, Chaos and Firmament, were you put up with the same kind of attacks that poor Velikovsky had to go through?
No, because Velikovsky's book was published by a major publisher back in a day when not nearly as many books are being published. Nowadays, I've heard that books are being published so fast that if you stack them up on a shelf side by side as they were published, you would have to drive a car 60 miles an hour to keep up with the length of the stack.
I believe that.
So it's much more difficult to have your works become known unless someone in the publishing industry grabs onto them and advertises them heavily for, you know, a week or so and give you a special little display in a bookstore and things like that.
It's like the Da Vinci Code. They did not think it would sell nearly what it did, so they had a small run the first time, sold out, and ended up selling at least, what, 25 million copies?
Well, I think that indicates that there's a hunger in the universal subconscious for, you know, the mystical things that are sort of surround us. And a lot of people don't just want to go through life in an 8-to-5 job and never try to understand the mysteries that surround them.
So when we talk tonight, John, about these theories we're going to talk about, are they yours based on Velikovsky's? Have you changed them a little bit to come up with some of your own ideas? Or are we talking primarily about Velikovsky and your interpretation of them?
No, I've gone far beyond Velikovsky.
Okay.
I started with Velikovsky, and particularly his idea that Venus was born out of Jupiter somehow.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he wasn't even clear as to exactly how Venus originated in Jupiter, whether Jupiter just belched it out or what.
Or it was a comet that smashed into it or something.
Or somebody smashed into it, yeah. But I don't agree with his date. He dated it around the time of the exodus of the Jews from Egypt.
Right, right.
And I placed the time way back at 4000 B.C., which is essentially the same time that the Bible begins the story of mankind on Earth. But the main thing that I've done is Velikovsky was always suspicious that Mars was involved, but he never quite figured out how Mars was involved.
It seems like you might have found out.
Well, I think so, yeah, and it's the most amazing story you can imagine.
Absolutely. Now, for everyone to get a better understanding, then, of what we're talking about tonight, why don't you take us back to the worlds in collision and tell us a little bit of what Velikovsky thought was going on in this solar system, and give us the timeline.
Well, he believed that the close pasts of Venus to the Earth occurred at the time of the Exodus, and that's what was being described in that story. I personally don't see how he could have come to that conclusion, but I think part of it was that he believed that when the Jews went into the Sinai, that the clouds covered the Earth for many, many years, and that the only source of clouds that lasted that long would have been the smoke that was outgassing from Venus, because Venus was a flaming body when it came close to the Earth.